Good morning. Welcome, everybody, to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Larry Kay, and I am from Chicago, and I will be the host for the presentation today. Today is Sunday, June 22nd, 2025. The share ID numbers for Friday, June 20th, are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting on Friday, that number is 22,543. That's 22543. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting on Friday, 22,544. That's 22544. This morning, A Vision for You presents, We Had to Have God's Help. So our speaker is going to bring to life the pages 60 through 63 in the big book. She's going to thread that together with her personal experience and insights. So looking forward to that. You know, if an idea is predicated on something, it depends on the existence or truth of whatever that something is, that thing, right? It's kind of like a declaration or an assertion that something is true. In other words, the predicate or the foundational thing is something essential for something else to be valid. Now, I mention all that because, not just to bore you to tears, but because the practical program of action, which our text suggests is the execution of the 12 steps, is predicated on the idea that when we're brought into a relationship with power, a power greater than human power, we can be restored to sanity. And let's remember that a major part of that process of restoration, and perhaps even the defining element of the psychic change, is the eradication of the mental obsession. So where the mental twist, as is mentioned, is driven out. So it's not based on magic or some sort of, you know, mystical illusion or no magic wand that renders you recovered. Rather, what's promised is that upon cooperation with the principles of the steps, you know, we go and we implement the steps, well, we move from a self-centered consciousness to a God-centered consciousness. Some, you know, might refer to as a higher power-centered consciousness or other-centered consciousness. But page 45 in the chapter entitled We Agnostics captures this very well, I think. It says that we found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudices and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results, even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power, which is God. And it's through, again, the implementation of the 12 steps, all of them, for a lifetime, really, that we get a promised result. And when we follow the instructions precisely, we're promised a spiritual awakening, spiritual experience, sufficient to bring us into alignment with a higher power of our own understanding. And I guess the question for me is, you know, can I do this myself? Well, I can certainly try. No one's going to prevent me from trying to do it myself. No one's preventing you from trying. And many of us try to do it ourselves. But as I've found that, you know, many of us became convinced long ago of what it says on page 45, our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. The lack of power was our dilemma. You know, we were going to have to find power, access to power, not just an awareness that there may be a power, but access to power that'll come by way of action. And it had to be a power greater than ourselves. It can't be us. It's got to be something greater than us, greater than human power. So two doors for me, no third door. First door, more self-will and the unleashing of a permanent, progressive, ultimately fatal disease that will destroy me. Or door number two, recovery as a result of a spiritual transformation. Again, there is no door number three. Page 53 says, crushed by a self-imposed crisis, we could not postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God, this higher power, is everything, or else the higher power is a big nothing, a big zero. God either is or he isn't. What was our choice to be? Well, joining us this morning to expand on this notion of needing God's help is Terry C. And Terry is a recovered compulsive overeater from New Jersey, and she's dedicated to our 12-step way of life. She's committed to carrying a message of hope to our fellowship, and it is with great appreciation that we welcome her to the line this morning. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning, Larry. Can you hear me?
I can. Yeah, you're coming through fine, Terry. Thanks for doing this.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that introduction. Good morning, everybody. My name is Terry C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Southern New Jersey. And I feel like this morning I want to talk first. I want to mention a few qualifiers. The first one is that I am certain that every recovery experience I have had has been necessary and never a waste of time. I'm sure many of you can agree with that. But I've been in for quite a while, so I'm going to talk about some experiences and how some of them led to other greater experiences. It's not that it all happened at once. God worked with me a very long time before some of my clear understandings of his purpose for me were clear. The second one is that nothing I say is original. I love the fact that this program is one of copying and plagiarizing, and the fact that the book really doesn't need anything else other than, you know, the words from it to describe what it's saying. It's so quite clear. And I can get overwhelmed. So as I take pauses or whatever, it's because my mind sometimes races to all the pages that have to do with what I'm talking about. And I realize that from experience now of sharing on this book, that often I get kind of stumped and I need to take that pause. And so I just want to put that out there. And then the last thing is, I'm so grateful that one of the things I'm clear on is when I'm asked to do something like this, that I have to seek guidance and direction. And I have done that for this instance. It hasn't been any different getting direction up till 5 minutes before I got on this phone. So I think that that's a great segue into something I'd like to talk about that kind of, you know, I'm not always very good about talking about what happened. You know, I talk about that. And when I do, I seem to talk a lot about what it was like the minute I walked in, or what it was like 2 minutes before I walked in, or maybe 5 days before I walked into Overeaters Anonymous. But my guidance and direction for this talk took me back further. And I'd like to start my share today with something that dates me a bit, because if you're a baby boomer and you have recollection of this, my story today starts with the Easy Bake Oven. I don't know if everybody, most ages, will know what that is, but if you're too young to understand what that is, it's a toy mechanism that basically was a child's version of an oven that had an intense light bulb that would be the source of heat. And it came with the very, very processed mixes of refined carbohydrates that you just added water to, and you put them in these delightful little pans and put them in your Easy Bake Oven, and they came out just a wonderful version of eventually what I was addicted to. So if you picture the Easy Bake Oven like I can picture the Easy Bake Oven and my experience with the Easy Bake Oven, I was probably seven or eight when I got that toy, and I can remember the thrill and excitement of my Easy Bake Oven. And I can remember looking back on it now, not that I recognized this at seven or eight, but clearly the thrill and excitement was power, choice, and control. It was like my own little haven. You know, I don't think my disease really started to show its ugly face until I was in my early teens. But I do believe at that age, know that I was. When I think about what was going on in my life, and this is not to to get into any kind of analysis or self-pity, but when I think of what was going on in my life, there was a lot of confusion and a lot of disturbance in my household. And power, choice, and control wasn't something that, of course, I was even conscious of, but the need for that in a child, I think, grows in those environments. And the people who I considered my gods at that time, because I know the concept that the book promotes as far as God, but the people that were my gods at that time, they, for whatever reason, couldn't be there for me as a god. And I often found, I'm the oldest of six children, I almost always found a need to protect them. And so it gets very confusing, gets very hectic when you're a child to, no one's assigned you that role, but that's when I can see, you know, I started assigning myself roles. So here's my Easy Bake Oven, and it was my little domain of something that popped out and created something that gave me ease and comfort. I liked the effect, you know, I could still remember just the whole idea of that. And just to go down a little road, another little road, I looked at, I think about the fact that I also started a little store at 7 and 8. I had a little front porch, and I invited all the neighborhood children to come to buy all of the little things I made in my Easy Bake Oven. And I remember two things about that. The one is that no one took me seriously, and I don't believe that store ever acted like a store. I think about Bill's story, and I thought, wow, at age 7, I think I might have been trying to be the leader of vast enterprises. I'm not sure, but it definitely came to light later in my life. And that's why I relate so much to Bill. But I remember, because it wasn't successful, enjoying all of it. You know, I had kind of stocked a little inventory for my store. And how does a 7 or 8 year old even think of that? You know, I think about the circumstances. To me, you know, when I look at the conditioning, our book talks about causes and conditions. When I really, really go deep into some of my step work, particularly 4 through 9, I see some of the conditioning. And, but my, you know, the Easy Bake Oven is just a lovely little memory, as well as thinking about some of that conditioning. The other thing I think about when I think about the Easy Bake Oven is it's recipes, right? We talk about it sometimes on the meeting. It's like an equation, right? We have this approach to life where we follow the directions, pop it into whatever, the result comes out as we anticipate, and then we just enjoy it, and then it's exactly the way we want it. And, you know, it's an approach to life that doesn't work. It only works with an Easy Bake Oven. It only works with a project. And that's another thing that I know about myself. Like, that was early conditioning for me to be project-driven. Like, I'm going to use that phrase a couple of times, project-driven. So, you know, my mom used to have a saying. It was one of her favorite sayings. And the saying was, God helps those who help themselves. And I think about that. And, you know, today I'm talking about we had to have God's help. However, my view of that and my introduction of that with my mom and, you know, saying that, I interpreted that God valued self-helpers. And eventually that meant to me God valued my management skills to manage my life and be the power in my life. And that conditioning kind of started early. And, you know, I'm not going to say that the people in my life caused my need to be lonely and distort the vision of God this way. I am going to say that, you know, I felt the need to be that power in my life. There were things going around that scared me. And, you know, all those things, that fear, that you know, I needed to have something I could count on, and it seemed to be me. And it continued to grow. That theory continued to grow into eventually a person who came in here that didn't even know there was a God and I wasn't it. You know, that's kind of how that mushroom. But, you know, we talk in this book about having an understanding of God, right? A relationship with God. Kind of think at that point and earlier in my life and kind of what developed as my concept of God to my adult life was, you know, think of something like Amazon, right? I'm an Amazon shopper. I think it's like just one of the greatest resources. I have no idea how they make such a big, you know, global thing work. I send things to people in other countries, and it's just magical, like how it happens, you know? And I don't have a relationship with Jeff Bezos, the owner of Amazon. I don't have a relationship with him. I just, you know, I have this limited understanding of how these things benefit me, but I don't have a relationship with him. I'm, you know, not buying everything he's selling. And I'm buying some of the things he's selling. And I kind of see that kind of a little bit of a parallel as how my relationship with God was before I came in here. You know, I think I'm in awe of some of it, but for the most part, you know, it's how it benefits me. So, you know, like Bill and Bob and the people that came, you know, before us and between us, that sort of thing, the load gets heavier in life, right? The load gets heavier. The food gets more comforting. I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about, like, you know, how I got here. I'd love to talk to you about that because I want to get to these pages. And I think that's more important. But, you know, the recipe concept or the project-driven Terry, you know, I walk in here, I am the leader of a vast enterprise. Like, not my own particular enterprise, but, you know, I was climbing the corporate ladder. I had that kind of job. I had the family. I had the home. You know, we were definitely keeping up with the Joneses, and I was trying hard to go above the Joneses. And I was 5'1" and a half and 240-plus pounds, and I land here. And I was great on paper. I was just like Fred. And more about alcoholism, I was just like Fred. You know, Fred, he's just on paper and in this book, Fred just looks like the picture of success. And he is feeling pretty good about it. And he's feeling pretty good about how he handles life. And even though we've told Fred some things that are important about the disease, he's pretty certain he's going to be okay. That's pretty much me when I walked in. I can relate to Fred. But then there's a doctor that I'm seeing, a therapist I start seeing because, you know, I have a lot of troubles in my family, right? I'm going to be a little bit tongue-in-cheek here. I've got a lot of people that aren't doing things they're supposed to be doing. So I'm sitting down with the therapist for about the fifth time and saying, if I could just lose weight, life would be perfect. It would be pretty good. Like, I just have this, like, you know, weight to get rid of. But that doctor, just like a lot of other doctors, particularly Silkworth in our book, he sees the hopelessness. He sees that I'm addicted to food, or I have a problem with food, or I have an eating disorder. He sees, just like the doctor in the book, that I need divine help. He sees I need divine help. He sees nothing else is probably going to work with regard to my physical recovery. So enter OA 1991. You know, and I come in here and I hear about the 12 steps and I'm thinking people are talking about God's going to help me and I'm going to help others. Well, I was pretty probably ignorant and not wanting to hear that God was going to help me. At that point in my life, there had been a significant loss. Pretty much, you know, if I had to describe the God of my understanding at that point, it was the Santa Claus God, and I was on the bad list. And but the part that said me helping others Well, I knew how to do that. I was the oldest of six. I raised my parents who were, you know, young parents. I mean, I knew how to help others. I was, you know, I was leader of so many people. Like, I'm really good at that. So I came in here and you told me that the only way I was going to help others was if I could recover. And my focus in that recovery was the illness, the physical illness. You know, I think about page 25. I know I'm not talking about that page today, but it says that I can go out blotting out the conscious, go on blotting out the consciousness of my intolerable situation or accept spiritual help. I came in here with an intolerable situation and it told me then I needed God's help. Like when I came in here, you were telling me I needed God's help. But like Larry said earlier, I wanted a third choice. I didn't want two choices. I wanted a third choice. So my third choice was really, you know, I'm project driven. I'll get this recovery thing down. I'll get this physical recovery down. I can do this. I wasn't a good diet or calorie counter, but I can do this. And I can tell you today that I could not see God's help when it was happening. I could not even see it. Like I didn't recognize it as that. And, you know, I was so used to my own power. I could call it God's help, and I might have told you that with the grace of God I was asking. But I don't know how much I was really connecting with God. I don't really know how much I was connecting with him about any of the work that I was doing in the rooms. And at that point, a lot of the meetings I was going to were focused on physical recovery. And the strenuous work, you know, to me was being passionate. I didn't get it, the strenuous work. Was, you know, doing maybe some of the step work. It wasn't what the real strenuous work is, and that's taking people through so that I can continue to learn from these steps. But in 2007, I've been, you know, now I've been in the room 16 years, and 2007 is when I discovered this book. And my purpose is not to talk about the book, to worship the book. My purpose is to talk about that it took me a while, and it wasn't because I was delayed or someone kept me down. But it took me what it took me to get to the book to start really understanding the directions and the way of living were in the book. Because, yeah, I might have had my food under control, but the unmanageability was still there. You know that it's not just about physical recovery. The book told me what to do. And I did what I could do. And that's kind of my beginning years with the book. You know, I realized that for so long, I still was comfortable being the power in my life. I couldn't see it at times. And it's still where there are times I can't see it. I'm going to talk to you just about to get into those pages, but it's still hard for me to see it. That's why this work is so crucial. It's why this work is so crucial. I'll give you some examples. I would pray for the addicts in my life to get well, to get recovery. I would pray for my children to make the right choices because they knew some of the choices they were making in their adults or when they were on their way to adulthood weren't necessarily the right choices. And I'm not talking great things, but just like, you know, things that I thought they should do differently. I would pray to not do something. I would pray to do something, to stop doing something. I would let God know I needed help with one of my projects. I would be the person who would judge my spirituality and say, I think I'm doing pretty good today. And I would be the one who didn't have an understanding of 6 and 7 and would let God know in that prayer the defects that I needed removed. That to me, those to me are examples of my misunderstanding of God's help. My misunderstanding of my relationship with God. And the idea that also, I believe Larry read earlier, that God is everything or he's nothing. He's everything or he's nothing, and I have to make a choice. Is it my project or God's project? Are they my children or God's children? Is it me who gets to judge my spirituality? Do I decide the defects that get removed? So the book brought me to the truth, the need to understand, the need to have a relationship with God, and the need to want to know the truth. You know, it's very easy to live a lie even in recovery. Very easy, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute. Today I know, and especially from this book and what you teach me, and Larry pointed to page 45 before we started, I know that the key ingredients for me in this design for living are honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. I love the bottom of page 13 when Bill talks about belief in the power of God, plus enough honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness were the essential requirements to establish a new order of things, a new order in my thinking, a new order in my thinking where I'm the power, where I'm making it work. You know, parenthood is a really good example. Really, really hard to see sometimes where, you know, I'm playing a power in their life. I mean, you know, when they're younger, I need to be sure they're safe, legal, moral. But after 18, after 21, you know, really hard to see sometimes. They get to make mistakes. They get to make their own decisions. So I want to just grab my book now for page 60. So I kind of believe my story is the ABCs, but my interpretation of it. When I look at the ABCs on page 60, I came in here, and yes, I could see not long in here that I had an illness, I had a disease, I was a compulsive overeater, and I couldn't manage my life. And yes, like a lot of other people, I thought the life was unmanageable because of the food. I didn't see food as the symptom, I saw it as the problem. But I know today it's the symptom of the unmanageability. That probably no human power could have relieved my compulsive overeating. I was certain there was nobody that was coming up with the answer, but I couldn't see that even in recovery, there were times I tried to be the power. You know, I really didn't bring God into my physical recovery until the last 7 or 8 years. And that was just not because I didn't know how to do it or no one taught me or, you know, no one made it. It was just because I wasn't meant to see it before that. I just, you know, I know that I had a faith in God coming in here. I know that these steps, you know, any of the work I did brought me closer to God. But my deeper understanding came from my true deeper study of this book, which continues on a regular basis. And that God could and would if he were sought. And seeking God is something now that I know no one, no two people can do that the same. You know, don't get to judge how you do it. You don't get to judge how I do it. Seeking God happens, you know, when I wake up in the morning and I realize, just what the book says, that the consciousness of the presence of God is the presence of God is the most important thing in my life today. That's the seeking of God today that I understand, but not so much when I came in here. So, the book talks about successful life, a self-will, you know, life being a success, life being perfect. Larry said something earlier, and I wish I could remember what it was, but it was something about, oh, restoring us to sanity, right? Restoring sanity. I wanted my life to be restored to what I thought was satisfying, what I thought was happiness. I wanted my life restored to perfection. You know, I had this idea that I'm going to live on a spiritual basis. And my description of that 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 2 years ago, 3 weeks ago is different. It's just different because I get a better understanding of it all the time. But I lost my train of thought. Let me just get back to it. I know now that perfect life doesn't exist. See, I'm project-driven, easy bake oven. I'm going to come back to that again. You know, the recipe, if I do this, I do this. When I read these traits on page 61, and this is what I want to read, in trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. I want to be those things often because I want to be okay. So I want to be those things with you, so I'll be okay. See, Bill's telling us in this part of the book that those are the traits I adopt, and they're not always. They appear to be virtuous, but they're not always virtuous. Often they happen, and I know we're not talking about the fourth or fifth step here, but often they happen when I'm trying to solve my fear problem. So I assign you a role, and you're not doing it. So I just keep trying to get you to do it by being nicer. And when you make me mad, then on the other hand, I may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most people, I'm likely to have varied traits. I'm going to give you an example. So my 85-year-old mother has had a rough year. She's had a few setbacks health-wise, and I can see a decline. And a week and a half ago, she had a terrible fall. And I have two siblings, and we're trying to distribute responsibilities for meeting her needs because she is home, and she has visiting care, but there's a lot that she could use help with. My sister got sick this weekend. And my sister's one of us, I believe, and she just often gets sick. She often gets sick, and often it's a lot of trying to do too much. So I find out she gets sick, and my first reaction was, and I said it out loud, oh, she wore herself down again. She did too much. She wore herself down again. This is my opinion. This is my perception. This is my immediate reaction. My feeling at that point, I know when I read these lines, she wasn't following my script. She wasn't doing what I wanted her to do. She was taking her career and her family situation and her friend situation, in my opinion, running herself down, and now she can't be here for my mom. That's me. That's me and my perception. That's my disturbance. That's me, my fears. She's supposed to solve my fears and be healthy. If she's healthy, then she can pick up her part of my mom's, needs. Like, that's like, I get to see that in action today. Like, I get to catch that when that happens and know that that is a God is nothing moment. Like, when I've decided to judge, usually based on my fear, self-delusion, self-pity, all the things it talks about in the next page, that's me judging that. That's not, I don't get to judge that. I don't get to qualify or criticize or label or assign a role to somebody. But it talks about, I want to be the actor who's really the, I want to be the director who's really the actor. And that's when those things start to surface. Give another example, and this one I'm not going to stay on too long. And if you want to talk about this, we can talk about it offline. But, there's the person that calls and says they can't stop eating. Okay, they call you and they want help and they can't stop eating. And I want to help that person. I want to do whatever I can to help that person. I have no idea when they call me what that help's going to translate into. I have no idea because I got to seek guidance and direction. I got to use step 11 to do step 12. I have no idea. And then we establish a relationship, whether it's a sponsee, whether it's just a person that needs help, they're going to call me on occasion, whatever that relationship ends up being, because I don't determine that, right? It happens, it falls into place, but there's a certain way that, I know and I pray and I get direction on how to work with people. But sometimes, you get that 10th call and they're still struggling, and you get that 18th call, and whatever the relationship is, if I'm rolling my eyes at that point, I've assigned a role. I've assigned a role, and I want to be okay, and their recovery's not making me okay, and how am I going to handle this? And, and I'm, like I said, we can have a whole conversation about that privately, but the point is, I don't get to judge. I don't get to design. I don't get to be the actor who becomes the director and makes assignments and judgments and predictions and expectations and whatever that's going to be. Like, I don't get to do that. I don't get to do that. Show doesn't come off, you know? Let me just check. Okay. And the next paragraph, is she not really a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? These are the things I'm talking about here. I'm a self-seeker often when trying to be kind. Now, I'm talking about this today not because I don't have genuine kindness and tolerance in my body. Like, I do. But I wanted to talk about how these pages and 4 through 9, but I'm talking about these pages, really helped me see. This analogy to me is the most important one in the book. Like, the, you know, some people talk about maybe the allergy is an analogy. For me, it's true. Like, I know it's true. Like, you know, I have an allergic reaction to certain foods. But, you know, this analogy, this one in particular, and we talk about it later, right? We talk about, you know, as we go through the day, we pause and agitated or doubtful because we no longer run the show. And running the show is, you know, from age 7 and 8, you know, easy bake oven. I want to run the show. I want it to be my kitchen, my oven. This is how it goes. So, no. Anyway, I'm sorry. There's somebody unmuted, and I don't know if you're telling me something about time, but just put that out there. Okay. So, and of course, you know, all my life, is it not evident to everybody that this is what I want? That I want them? That my sister needs to be there for my mom. I don't get to decide that. So I want to take these paragraphs and I want to read them to you in a way that they have been just so, they've been coming to life for me so much in the last few weeks, coming to life for me. I'm going to go back to page 60, and I'm going to do something. I'm going to do an exercise out loud that I often ask people to do that I'm working with. And so I've told you the story about my mom and where we are as a family with her. She's a widow. She's a widow. My mom's a widow, so she's alone. I'm going to ask somebody to mute. The feedback that I'm getting.
You know, Terry, yeah, let me do this. Nancy, would you mute the lines, and then Terry, would you, you'll get muted as well, perhaps, and you can unmute again. If you
okay.
would do that
Thank
for
you.
Us, Nancy. Yeah, I don't want you to be interrupted. You bet. Okay, let's see if we can get Terry back.
I'm back.
There you are. Okay, thanks, Drew.
Okay, thank you. So I find myself getting very angry with my mom these days, and I've asked God to help me with this sadness that's going to come out while I read this to you. But I find myself getting really mad with her. And I realize that she just had a fall. She's had a lot of major setbacks. You know, and I can put all the intellect and logic into it that I want. All the intellect and logic. But without spiritual help, it doesn't work. So I want to start reading my experience with these pages these past couple weeks. So being convinced that no human power can relieve me of what's going on and that God could and would if he were sought. And that, you know, I forgot A, that I am an addict and I want to manage life like I want to manage life. Being convinced I'm at step 3, which is that I decide to turn my mom's life and my life over to the care of God. Just what do I mean by that? And what do I do? The first requirement is that I have to be convinced that my life right now or her life run on my own self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, I seem to almost always be in collision with something or somebody, even though my motives are good. People like the doctors, people like her caretakers, people like my siblings. I'm the actor here who wants to run this whole show. I'm forever trying to arrange my mom's life for, you know, that her medications are right, that, you know, she gets the right amount of rest, that she gets the right meals. If only my arrangements would stay put, because that doesn't always happen. If only the people in her life and my life would be doing as I wish, this rest and recovery that she needs would be great by my definition. Everybody, including me, would be pleased. I know they'd be pleased. Life would be wonderful in trying to make these arrangements. I may sometimes be quite virtuous. I'm kind, considerate sometimes, I'm patient and even generous. Modest and self-sacrificing all the time, because isn't that the equation? If I'm nice and I follow the nice rules and I'm tolerant, isn't she supposed to live longer? On the other hand, I may be me. Egotistical, selfish, dishonest. But I have varied traits. But what usually happens is the show doesn't come off very well. Life hasn't been treating me right lately because my mom sometimes digresses. So I just exert myself more and I call more doctors. And I try to get to everything I can get so that, and I be gracious about it. So the place suits me. I can admit that I'm somewhat at fault sometimes, but I'm sure other people are more to blame. I can become angry, indignant, self-pitying. Oh my God, can I be self-pitying? What is my basic trouble? I'm a self-seeker even when trying to be kind. I'm a victim of the delusion that I'm going to wrest happiness and satisfaction out of this if I only manage her life well. And isn't it evident to the rest of the players that these are the things that make sense, the things that I want? Doesn't everybody want her to live longer? And sometimes don't my actions make them want to retaliate, matching what they will benefit from and what they need to do for their own needs? Don't I produce a lot of confusion rather than harmony when the only thing that I'm doing is exercising my power in this situation? It's the only thing that I'm doing, is producing confusion. I'm the person who's self-centered and egocentric, because I like to point out, or I can easily point out, what everybody is or isn't doing right. I'm going on to the next page, on page 62. Whatever I protest, whatever I believe in, whatever I claim to be my right or my belief, am I not mostly concerned with myself, my resentments of these people who aren't doing what I want, my self-pity? Selfishness, self-centeredness, that is the root of my trouble. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity, I step on the toes of my fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt me even without provocation. But invariably, at some time in the past, I've made decisions based on self, which have placed me in a position where I'm hurting. And the position based on self is that I get to decide how long or what quality of life my mother has. And my mother is not critical. I don't want to leave that impression with anybody. As my one friend described it, it's very painful if you even have a glimpse that an elderly person in your life might be approaching or has arrived at the final countdown. So my troubles, I think, are basically of my own making. They arise out of myself, and I am an extreme example of self-will on riot, though I don't think so. Like, this is my mom. We're talking about the woman that gave me life. I understand the value here, the attachment. But the book is telling me to have a different point of view, because it says above everything, have to be rid of this. It's going to kill me. And God's the only one that's going to help me be rid of it. The only one that's going to help me be rid of it. See, whatever my intellectual, moral, philosophical convictions, I can't do them without God. I can't do them without God. And I've recently done some step work in this and realized I want my logic and my moral convictions and my philosophical convictions to fix my pain. The pain that has arrived recently with just, you know, observing what's going on in my mom's life and thinking that this could be the final countdown. I can't do any of this exercising my own power. I've told you all that I'm an expert in exercising my own power. You know, me as the power is never going to work. But the other thing to note about that, and this comes from God, not because I'm doing it wrong. It's just that in that 4 through 9, I have to recognize that that's never going to work and be ready for God to take me to better things. It says, neither could I reduce any of this on my own power. We had to have God's help. There's nothing I could talk about today that doesn't apply to. There's no steps in this book. There's no step work that we do. There's no step that we don't need God's help for. A newcomer came to a face-to-face meeting that we started recently, and she said, I don't know what made me can't come. Like, I can't even believe I'm here. And I'm thinking, that's God's help. Like, we get here with God's help. And everything after it is about that. Everything after that is about that. So it says in the next line, I had to do something else. In order to receive God's help, I have to quit doing God's job. And, you know, I'm so grateful for these steps because I read you pages today that have come alive for me in the last couple of weeks. Because every time I get asked to speak, I feel like it's more about what's going on now in my relationship with God than anything. More about now, because as I say to a lot of people, I need God more today than I needed him when I walked in here. I've just read you pages to tell you why. That's one example of why. I need God more today. And I have to quit playing God. But that doesn't mean, see, that easy bake oven approach to life, that project driven approach to life tells me if I do this and I do this and I do this, I'm not going to have this agony. I'm not going to have this sadness. I'm not going to have this pain. But that's not how it works. I'm still going to have this agony. I'm still going to have the sadness. I'm still going to have this pain. You know, chief thing, I heard in the room, the chief thing that separates me from God is the idea that I am. That's the thing I'm grateful for. I know that, you know, I read you some of the embarrassments, like, I don't want to be mean, egotistical, and selfish when I'm talking to a nurse in the doctor's office. Not who I want to be. And when I recognize that behavior, I need to, you know, make amends for it, or at least, you know, recognize it as wrong behavior. And, you know, if I've harmed anybody, let them know that. It's that God's just, he's there waiting for me to come back to him and recognize he's never left. He's there. And it's me that separates myself. It's me that, you know, I listen to an AA speaker that spells it out for me. I'm going to wrap it up shortly. You know, he spells it out for me because he said, you know, the self that we talk about, the one that's selfish and self-pitying, and delusional, and, like, you know, that's not who's with God. That's a different, you know. He said, Bill even wrote it in the book. He said, our actor. It's like a separate self, you know, our actor. It's like he didn't put it first person. So, like, that third step decision is me saying, I have to have your help. I have to have your help because I've been negating your help for this period of time or whatever. And I know I need, because on my own power, it's always going to go the same way. If that's the third choice, it's always going to go this. It's always going to end up with that first choice, blotting out the consciousness of the intolerable situation. It's always going to go there. I focused on that line today, and I'm going to wrap up here. I focused on that line today because I don't care if you're in here 3 days or like me, 34 years. It's have to have. It's the most crucial thing in my life. It's I don't exist without that. I literally don't exist without that because I know my disease would have killed me. I know I didn't talk a lot about the horrific, torturous part of this disease, the physical part, but I would have been dead. And I can tell you that I can die an alcoholic-style death, not in the food, because this will kill me. If I don't have God's help with the things I've just talked about, it will kill me eventually, somehow, some way. So I'm so grateful for your understanding of how I might have been a little disconnected on things because emotionally it definitely brought me to a place where I guess I needed to go. But I'm just so grateful to be here, and I'm so grateful to talk about the lines that are the most important thing in my life. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Terry, for your very vulnerable and authentic presentation of hope this morning. We're so appreciative for your time this morning. And just so you know, Terry's contact information, we will ask her for that at the end of the recorded portion of this presentation. We're going to...
Larry, can you try and clear your line, Larry?
Yeah, Larry, your gut, it's bobbling.
Okay, let's see if I can do something about that. Are we still, am I still coming through in a garbled way?
You're still very garbled, Larry.
Okay, because I'm getting garbled by the people that were speaking as well. So let me try to call back in on the line, and I'll go from there.
Right, Larry will be right back, so everyone hold tight, be thinking of your questions for Terry C., who just gave a magnificent special edition, and we can't wait to hear the questions.
Larry,
you're garbled. I'm garbled too? Okay, when Larry gets back, I'll jump off.
Wait, you sound better now.
Okay.
No, you ended up not being garbled, so.
Larry, are you back? Okay. Go for it, Larry. Larry? Larry? Okay, can people hear me now?
I can hear you.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
can
hear you.
There
yeah,
you go,
you
were... Larry, you're back. You're back. You're
okay.
Good. You're
I think
good.
we were all garbled. Now we're not. So hopefully I'm coming through not garbled. So what I was saying was first, Terry, thank you so much. Beautiful, very vulnerable, authentic presentation of hope. We're so appreciative of that. We're going to please stay for at the end of the recorded portion of this. We will ask Terry for her contact information. So wait for that. We're going to now transition to a Q&A question and answer phase of the presentation. Before we do that, let me give you the share ID for this morning's presentation. That number is 22,545. So this morning's share ID is 22545. Now let's transition. If you have a question, questions only, please, what you're going to do is you're going to press star 1, and then you're going to give me your first name and last initial. Who has a single question for Terry this morning?
Jason Tapey.
Gotcha.
Hanayeta.
Gotcha, Hanayeta. Who else?
Rivka R.
I gotcha, Rivka. Questions for Terry. Anybody else? And again,
this
star
is
one.
Patricia?
Oh. Patricia. I heard you, Patricia. We'll get you in. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. We'll get the last initials, too, when you come on. We'll ask for that, where you're calling from. So far, I got Jason, Anieta, Rivka, and Patricia. Anybody else?
Judy N.
Gotcha, Judy.
Kathy Jo P.
Kathy Jo P. And anybody else? Okay. Perhaps we'll have time after the first round of questions. So here's the order we'll go. We got Jason, Anieta, Rivka, Patricia, Judy, and Kathy Jo. If you would just give your last initial and where you're calling from in case someone wants to look you up on the line for the questions. So we'll start off with Jason, followed by Anieta. Jason, good morning. Good to hear you.
Good morning. I'm Larry. Jason J.P. from Pennsylvania. Larry, a little garbled still, but I could make out what you were saying.
You are garbled.
Yeah,
Jason. I'm going to mute the lines and see if I can figure this out so everyone will be patient. And Jason, please unmute.
Everybody sounds garbled.
Jason, let's try again. How about now, Jason? Can we see if you can tap in?
Larry, you're garbled also again.
I'm garbled as well. Wow.
Yeah.
Now you're not.
Okay.
Correct.
What about now? Okay. Good.
Oh,
good.
Thanks.
Hey, Janice. Thanks for the assist there. We certainly appreciate you. Okay. Let's try it again, Jason. Do you want to try? And if not, we'll go to Anieta and we'll circle back. Jason, are you there?
Me?
All right, we'll come back. Oh, I thought I heard you coming through. Okay, let's try Anieta, and then we'll come back to Jason. Anieta, how about you?
Hi, this is Anieta R. from Texas, Plano, Texas.
Good.
Am I garbled?
Yes, no, you're good. What's your question,
Anieta? Oh, okay. First, I have to say thank you for the Easy Bake Oven idea. I loved mine. So my question is, first of all, I'm the mother. I'm like your mother. You know, I would be the mother. What could your mother say to you that would help you be more at peace, to help to be able to, I don't know, to make you feel more confident in where she is? Because I think that that's going to happen to me one day, and I would love to know what would be the best thing for me to tell my kids.
I think that I bring this back to God, because whenever my mother speaks with her faith, I feel comforted. That's the bottom line. Whenever... And my mother, when I have a memory of my mother, it's always bringing us to church. And even though that was a religious experience, it was the beginning of an introduction to my spiritual experience. So I think whenever my mother talks about her own faith, and my mother is one of us, she's actually been in the room. But most of her ailments right now are a direct correlation of this disease. So it's another part that's difficult, but whenever she talks about her faith, it just brings us, we're on the same spiritual level then.
That's great. Thank you so much for the question, Anieta. And let's try to circle back to Jason. Jason, are you back? Okay, not hearing Jason, and we'll continue to try to circle back to him. Let's go on to Rivka. Rivka, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you so much for your service. And you were just garbled before, so I guess the new question is, am I garbled?
No, you're not.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Terry, for a very thought-provoking share. And I also love the Ease Bake Oven. I just hollered for one when I was a kid, and I never got one. And so it really was very... you know, interesting to hear you talk about it. Anyway, my question is, when you say that, you know, bringing up that he's really a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind. So when you get into that place, how do you switch to God from being a self-seeker when you're trying to be kind? is it just a thought, or is it something else you do, or what happens when you realize that?
Yeah, and that's what I'm so grateful for this work, you know. Thank you, Rivka, for the question. I'm so grateful for this work because it's a little easier for me to see now when I'm, you know, in self and self-seeking and being kind, you know. And so that, you know, when I see that, you know, when it happens, I'm usually disturbed, right? We know that disturbance, right? We try to continue to see where we're mistaken. Like when I'm being extra sweet to my mother-in-law, and really the motive is I just want her to, like, think my husband is the favored son instead of his brother. You know, I just, it's like a little thing, like, I'm disturbed. I need to go to God. I'm disturbed. You know, it's that disturbance comes up, and all of a sudden I look back on it. And that's why these paragraphs, these become critical to me in the fourth step, you know, because that mini tenth kind of happens right there. It doesn't always happen. You know, it takes me days sometimes to circle back and say, oh, that's where it started. You know, that's where you set yourself up. That's where you started, you know, exercising your power and assigning somebody a role that they disappointed you in. So, you know, whatever it takes, it's that thing that the book tells us, right? Like when we're disturbed, when we're mistaken, when we continue to watch, we watch. Just like it says, we watch. And I hope that's helpful, and I hope it wasn't too vague, but that's kind of what brought me to immediately. Be happy to talk to you offline if you'd like to.
Larry, press star 1.
Okay. Hey, Nancy, am I garbled? Am I coming through okay now?
You're good. You're good. Thank you.
Okay, we're good for now. Welcome to Garbled. Good morning, Garbled. Okay. Next up, we have Patricia, followed by Judy. Patricia, good morning to you.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes. I'm Patricia Ann from D. My last name is D. From North Carolina. I just want to know, when you get into that self thing, how long does it take you to realize that how you know that you're in it, that you're doing that control stuff again? How long does it take? Like, anyways.
Well,
okay,
I don't really have a canned experience. I have experiences where. Just before I got on the phone this morning, I was thinking about that one with my mother-in-law. So, you know, I didn't realize it when I was doing it. I realize now it occurred yesterday, and, you know, that's something that, you know, I didn't realize when I was doing it. And yet sometimes I'll realize I need to talk to somebody about something that's circling back in my head over and over again. And it happened 2 weeks ago and I didn't take care of it. I didn't watch for it. You know, we watch as much as we can watch for those disturbances. So I really don't have a canned experience. I don't have an equation for that, but I'm project driven. I'd really like one, but I just don't, it's to answer your question, to give you the amount of time, you know, it's just not that scientific for me. But I know the longer that I do the work, the more alert I am to the mistakes on, let's say, a more rapid basis. And I hope that's helpful.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Patricia. Hopefully I'm not garbled. Let's just check one more time to see if Jason is back. Jason, are you back there? Okay, I'll presume not. So we'll move on to a question from Judy. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning. Thank you, Larry, and thank you, Terry, for your wonderful share. And I felt like I was listening to you explaining your journey to a spiritual awakening. My question is, your God is everything or God is nothing. So what do you do for the 11th steps? Specific in detail. In the morning, what is your routine prayer and meditation, and even throughout the day and the evening? How do you keep God with you? Thank you.
Judy, I think I'm going to go back to something I said. I appreciate the question. I know it's a common one. So people often use the phrase or discuss or mention living in 10, 11, and 12. I know that what those steps really tell me are I have to continue looking for my mistakes. I have to continue to watch for when I get into selfishness, self-centeredness, delusion, dishonesty. And then the 11th step tells me I have to seek God's will, you know, and I have to improve that process of seeking his will through prayer and meditation. So, you know, I can tell you that I like on a perfect day, a day when I don't have to be rushing off to be with my mom or, you know, or rushing somewhere else or have an appointment, that I'd love to have that perfect day every day where before I even get out of bed, I'm thinking about, you know, how, you know, God is conscious of my life. He's there. He's beside me. He's not, you know, he's present in my life. And that's one of the things I do. You know, if I'm like, it's not the alarm going off and, you know, the consciousness of the presence of God for me has to begin early in my day, no matter how that happens, whether I've taken the time to do it before I actually get my feet off of the bed or when I'm able to be awake, come into a space in my house where I get private with God and just have that quiet time and that prayer time. It never looks the same. It never looks the same for me because life is life. It just never looks the same. I mean, I have a prayer and meditation group I go to on Wednesday morning, and we pray and meditate for almost an hour. I don't get that every day, and sometimes I don't make it on Wednesday. So my answer to your question is that to me, the most important thing when people ask me that question is to say, to have that conscious contact whenever I can, because the only time that I can have it is in this moment. I can't have it 4 days from now. I can't have it 4 minutes from now. And when my eyes open in the bed, I can't have it, you know, 15 minutes from then. It's the moment I open my eyes, and anytime I'm conscious, I want to understand that God's there. And prayers happen when I'm able to talk to God, and meditation happens when I'm listening. But that can happen even if I'm in a crowded room. Like, that can happen. So I don't have an equation for that, although if you go back to the Easy Bake Oven Project Driven Terry, I would like to. I can just say I have meditation books. On a perfect day, I'd like to, you know, read those. Sometimes I don't get to read them till nighttime. I'd like to write some things in my journal. I don't always get to do that. I like to take quiet time with the big book. But if I can't do that in the morning and I get to do that 11:30 at night, I'm so grateful. If I get to do that at noon because that's when I remembered it, I'm so grateful. I just, you know, I believe God will help us with those steps just like every other step when we ask him for direction. So I hope that didn't sound like a non-answer. And again, be happy to discuss that.
Thanks for the question, Judy. Okay, be thinking about, before we go to Kathy Jo, be thinking about if you have a question for Terry coming up on her presentation, We Had to Have God's Help, pages 60 through 63. Okay, Kathy Jo, good morning to you.
Hi, Larry. This is Kathy Jo P. in Minneapolis, and I am grateful for your service, Terry and Larry, and for this meeting. My question is, tell me about your outreach calls coming in and going out and how you center those around hope.
How I center those around hope? Or
hope? Yes, hope. Just because sometimes we can get in the problem. Maybe I should use the word solution instead.
Okay, outreach calls. I probably, like, this week I had to get on the phone with somebody I'm usually the receptor of a lot of calls. I have to admit, I don't make a lot of calls. The face-to-face meetings, the Zoom meetings that I'm on, I might have occasion to talk with people. I knew I needed to make a call this week. I knew I needed to make a few calls this week because of exactly everything I talked about in this meeting. And those people were able to help me kind of go a little deeper and see what was going on with the pain I was trying to fix. I don't guess if you're saying I don't have a common practice with outreach calls. I just know when it's time that I have to get out of my head and hear God's voice through something other than the way that I've been trying to listen to it. And I'm grateful for this fellowship. And I'll be honest and say I grew up in a household where our family phone was my dad's business line, and phone calls were discouraged. I mean, they just didn't happen in my family, you know. And as a teenager, it was just something I couldn't even, you know, embrace because it just didn't happen. So as a consequence, I tell a lot of people I'm really not that good at outreach calls. I'm, you know, obviously there's parts of the program that I am so grateful I, you know, overcame that ignorance. But I'm probably the worst qualifier for that particular approach to recovery. Not that I'm not in touch with fellows, because I guess there is a series of I guess the way I define outreach calls, I'm not my strong suit.
Thanks, Kathy Joe. Okay, we still have time. If you have a question for Terry, we certainly get you in the queue here. Who has a question? Press star one. Any questions for Terry C? Okay, last call. If you have, okay, Adrian, I heard you. Anybody else? We got Adrian. Okay, Adrian, let's go with your question. What's your question for Terry this morning?
Thank you. Am I garbled?
No, you're good. You're good.
Okay. I wasn't taking notes. That's my error, and I apologize for that. But the pages that you referenced when you were reading, I would like to be able to go back to them and put my own self in there.
Yeah, and they were pages 60 to 63 that I actually used as you know, my most recent experience.
Thank you.
Oh, you bet, Adrian. Okay, last call. I'm flicking the lights on and off. An old bar reference. Siri. Right? Who else?
Suri C. with a question.
Hi, Suri. Yeah, sure. Anybody else that wants to join Suri? We have time. Okay, Suri, your turn. Good morning to you.
Good morning. So first of all, thank you so much for your share. So I have heard over the years that one of the hardest times that people have is to keep their abstinence is when dealing with direct family members and specifically their parents. Have you lost your abstinence in dealing with your mom in the past, and how did you pull yourself out, or even if it's wasn't necessarily with food, but when losing your cool, like what is it 60 to 62 that you went to? What three things do you feel like were most helpful to you that you gained and were able to use to pull yourself back out? Thanks.
Sure. Thanks, Suri. So as far as the physical recovery, no, I haven't lost my abstinence. I still have food neutrality, which is the most important thing to me. And I'm trying to think honestly, in the last year even with my mom and the different things that have gone on, if, you know, I had the lurking notion, even though I might not have acted on it, but nothing's really coming to mind. I know that during these times, I'm a person who weighs and measures. And I know that at this, you know, when these things are going on, like the weighing and measuring isn't enough. Like it's something I should be conscious of, like for me, because volume will be where it starts for me. Like that'll be where it starts. So that's the answer to that question. When it comes to, you know, losing my cool and kind of, you know, that to me, like that, when that happens, right? Like when that happens, like, you know, I'm disturbed. Like I don't see the resentment right away. I don't see that I'm trying to be okay. You're supposed to make my life okay by acting a certain way. Like I can't see it, but that's, you know, to me, that's the idea that we never do the step work as an event. It's not a one-time thing. And while 10, 11, and 12 are there to tell us to keep doing it, sometimes we got to really do a significant effort. Like this, these paragraphs that I read today aren't just like because I thought about them. I was on the phone doing, you know, I was taking the pen out, doing some writing and doing some deep sits. Step work with some people, see that, you know, what the truth of all this is and the sadness of all this is. And so I don't know if that's kind of where you were going, but, you know, there's a line that I love in Bill's story that says, without you, I am lost. Of myself, I am nothing. When Bill, you know, well, I made it into a prayer, but he talks about without God, he's lost of himself, he's nothing. Like, I know that disturbance is when I'm nothing. Like, I just know that that's what's going on, right? Now, sometimes I notice it right when it's happening. Sometimes I don't notice it. In this case, there have been a couple things that have gone on with my mom that I'm just starting to see a little more clearly that happened in her last, you know, her last illness and hospitalization. So, you know, if we're honest, open-mindedness, and willing to see the truth, it's going to come. And it comes in God's time. It doesn't come in my time. It comes in God's time. And it doesn't matter if you've been recovering 3 days or 30 years. Like, that's still the name of the game for me. Like, God's in charge. He's in charge. I don't get to judge my spirituality and whether I think, well, that's not that bad, or, you know, I took care of that already, or, you know, I'm really not bothered by that. I don't get to judge it. I'm the worst person to judge my spiritual condition. So, love to talk to you about that if you, you know, want to dive into it a little more.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks, Suri. And also, if you have a question, a lot of times people have questions and they would prefer just to ask those directly. And so we're going to hang out for a moment. We're going to ask Terry for her contact information. I know she'll be kind enough to give that, and you can reach out directly to her. So we appreciate everyone. And Terry, thank you so much. It was just a real gem, real nice addition to the archive. So much appreciated. I'm going to give the share ID again before we close here for Terry C's presentation. That number is 22,545. That's 22545. We're going to close, record a portion with the reading from page 164 from the big book in a chapter entitled A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.